What's going on, everybody? Welcome to our downtown studios. This is Five Rounds today on FN. He's Robin Black. I am John Ramdean, and there's a ton of stuff to get to. I think we're going to look back in time first, because last weekend you and I were in Ottawa, Ontario, for the UFC's inaugural event in our nation's capital. Of course, we saw the main event tilt between Rory McDonald and Stephen Thompson when the judges' scores were read. Pretty lopsided when you look at things. Stephen Thompson, I think, getting 50-45, is that what it was?
One judge gave Rory one round, maybe one or two.
Although it looks like it was a runaway by Stephen Thompson, and he clearly won the fight. I think it was a lot closer than people realize. I know that, you know, it looks like how do I say this? Stephen Thompson, he didn't come out of the fight unscathed. You know, when I went to shake his hand, his right hand was damaged. Mm-hmm. He could barely walk.
But in the realm of injuries, I'll take hand over skull.
Over skull. And that's what it was. I think Rory's going to have surgery again. Had surgery for the Robbie Lawler fight. Now, again, I'm not trying to suggest that it's like, oh, this was a razor-close split decision.
There was tension filled.
Yeah. There were so many moments that you felt that if Stephen Thompson was not 100% on his A game, that Rory, because he was willing to roll the dice and try to figure out different ways, that eventually if Thompson kind of is like, okay, I just don't know what to do, that you could see how Rory would find a way.
Yeah.
How did you see this fight?
Yeah, that tension was there all the time. But that depends how you're watching a fight. There's a lot of people who ended up really enjoying this fight.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people. Now,
that hated
in the
it.
Room, yeah. they didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
But it's harder to really feel everything out in the room. What's easy to feel out is
Boss O'Connell. Yeah.
The boss and the real OC.
They're just stood there smashing each other.
That's not a nuanced thing. Although it kind of is, because Bosse slipped to throw. The difference might come down in the end. You got to land a few more than he did and hurt him one or two more times, you know, in two out of three of those rounds. And it could have been the difference. In that chaos, Bosse has dozens and dozens of hours more of experience from his hundreds of fights on ice, holding on to another. A hockey fight, you literally, like, you're anchored to each other. So in that, he's found comfort. But so that's easy to understand because we can feel it. And no matter what you're looking for in a fight, that you'll feel that. You'll feel that urgency. But this the tension of a Rory versus Wonderboy fight, I think a lot of people feel. I think you maybe feel it better when you watch it at home, when you really see all the angles. You can feel how close those moments are because you need to be near perfect for 25 minutes. And I think people enjoy different things about fighting than they did before because people suddenly enjoy Dominic Cruz. And I think they enjoy Stephen Thompson. And you can feel that these guys are pioneering something that nobody seems to have the answer for since Matt Brown pushed and pushed and pushed. And Matt Brown was just about killed himself. Yeah. He'll tell you that. And he's just got that little extra will. When you talk about fighting Dominic Cruz or Wonderboy, and there are others, you end up talking about the guy attacking them more.
Because if we define
what they are in simple terms, and that is you can't get to them. You know, we used to with Machida, Machida's elusive. It's not just elusive. It's not like they're trying to run away from you. They're not allowing you to travel through space unless they travel the same amount away from you or travel away from you on a different angle. They're just – it is elusiveness, but that's too general a term for it. It is range management. And Steven's using that term now, you know. And Faraz uses that term now, and that term has become – we understand why that is. You manage that distance. So if you're doing that – do I ever beat you at managing it? Because your job is to keep me away by managing distance. My job is to close that, manage the distance to get to you. Well, he's beating these guys on range management. Dominic is. And so we talk about Rory and we talk about Uriah or we talk about TJ because we know what you're trying to do. And he's making you not do it. So we talk, well, he tried this and it didn't work. Rory tried that and it didn't work. TJ tried this and it didn't work.
Yeah.
That is mind-blowing. because Rory and TJ tried a whole lot of different things, and they still couldn't do it through those tension-filled 25.
Yeah, I hope people don't think that we're kind of discrediting Stephen Thompson's performance. It was a masterful performance.
Brilliant.
Like, just the idea of everybody recognizes how good Rory McDonald is, and this guy's a savage. He was coming to hunt down the man standing across the cage from him, especially considering the last time he stepped inside of the cage, he was stopped. So we talked to him leading up to this
spot.
His nose was shattered again. But he was so mentally strong. He told me that this has been the best year of his life. You know, he's having a kid very, very soon. You know, new contract. He feels that this is his path. He's going down the path of becoming a warrior, doing something. I mean, he already is a warrior, but continuing the
his
path as a warrior. And for him to go in there against Stephen Thompson, he could not solve it. Of course, Stephen Thompson is a genius. Robin, you mentioned it. His mobility, his movement, his ability to hurt Rory McDonald. I know, because a lot of people can look at the Machida style as that point style. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm just tagging and moving around.
Thompson brutalizes you.
And I think when you think about the UFC and you think about that fight with Steve Bosse and Sean O'Connell, and you think about Rory McDonald and Stephen Thompson, you just assume because they're in the UFC, well, everybody's at a certain level.
Yeah.
But they're not really.
It's
a different level. When you look at Rory and Stephen Thompson and you compare Sean O'Connell and Steve Bosse, two very talented guys, but when you assess their skills, their overall skill set, what is the difference?
Yeah, I mean, just it's everything's a little better.
Yeah.
And then there are areas of true genius. I mean, you take two of the best NBA players and you take some great young guys in college with, you know, a lot of gumption.
Yeah.
That's the difference. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's right across the board. But I think we end up, because a lot of people who want to share ideas of different kinds, over time, your mission isn't, I want to show you what we know. You know, we want to create a debate. Debate is something people really embrace in entertainment and in media because it gets people – if you can get people to argue
– get them mad.
Get them mad versus somebody who defends an idea in their homes about something you put on television or on your website, that's how you sell stuff. People don't realize it when they're mad. I hate Conor McGregor. Mm-hmm. You're selling that. You're making that guy money. But so debate is great, and debate is part of it. But we end up, if the goal isn't just, I want to get my stuff turned in and say a bunch of things and hopefully some people click it, but you're really passionately trying to get ideas across, you realize you're battling culture as well. And one thing that is a battle, and it's an ongoing battle, is people don't realize that things can be many things at the same time. You know my buddy West Coast Dave.
I do.
Awesome dude. He loves watching fighting with me.
Dave, what's going on?
What's happening? My man, was he mad? He was angry when the world spent more time talking about Paige VanZant's heart than about Rose's skill beating the crap out of her. He was mad.
Yeah.
He wasn't having that. But both those things are true.
Mm-hmm.
Rose doesn't get to beat the crap out of her unless she has incredible heart. Rose finishes her round. Both are true.
Yeah.
And so you can discuss the brilliance of Dominic Cruz, or you can discuss the drive of TJ to not be beaten off, to not be stopped, pushed away, you know, defended against.
I didn't understand the reference.
Who knows what I was referring? Could be anything. And it's the same thing. You want to talk about the brilliance of Wonder Boy? Because we talked about that. We have talked about that a lot. I'm the guy obsessed with this idea of range management and movement as being the thing to overcome. And it keeps getting proven over and over again. And people argue, there's no such thing as the movement. Tell that to Dominic Cruz.
Yeah.
Tell that to Wonder Boy. Tell that to Holly Holm. Yeah. And then people, she lost. Yes, but for 4.9 fights, doesn't mean it's perfect.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean everyone who does this will win every fight. But this is the new limit that has been pushed, that if you can't conquer it, Dominic Cruz will beat you. Dillashaw will beat everyone but Dominic Cruz. Demetrius will beat you. Conor McGregor will beat you. Doesn't matter how much you hate Conor McGregor, if he's going to beat
Nate Diaz.
Nathan, as his brother calls him, he puts on his own Twitter, and you call him, although people are very angry that you call him by his actual given name. But if he's going to win that fight, it's by moving, making him need to go turn back towards him, get hit, and need to turn back towards him. And Nate Diaz, who's way smarter than anybody gives him credit for, now maybe a lot of people do, but they should, already is figuring that out. He knows what this guy's going to try to do. Even his buddies are like, he's going to try to move and outpoint him. They know what he's going to try to do. If there's going to be an answer, it's to beat his movement. All of this is true. At the same time, Rory's heart and desire and unwillingness to stop with a shattered nose and when everything else was failing, that's also true.
Exactly.
Every great fight has many stories, but we're like, this guy knocked out that guy. He needs to retire. He should fight for the title. It's not like that. Nothing in life is like that. We're not arguing this to make people see fighting different. You want people to look at their life and understand things aren't one thing. Things are many things.
However, I think the way that you can change people's perspective or that it will be changed is when Stephen Thompson eventually faces off with the winner of Robbie Lawler and Tyron Woodley. And the sense that I'm getting from the underground community, the casual fans, is that this is Robbie Lawler's fight to lose. Based on his experience, based on where he is right now, based on the level of competition that he's faced throughout his career, that when you look at this fight on paper, and a fight doesn't take place on paper, takes place in a real live scenario where there's pain and there's damage and there's not perfect scenarios. But if you were a betting man, I would imagine that you would be picking Robbie Lawler to win this fight against Tyron Woodley.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely
You're
not.
You're picking Tyron Woodley.
Tyron Woodley. You're talking about Wonderboy.
No, Tyron Woodley.
Because Wonderboy, I'm picking
big. And that's what I'm saying. So
I'm picking big. So I'll tell you the reasons why. Tyron Woodley. Yes, but there's the large thing, the unknown unknowns, you know? What is if Tyron Woodley, so you're reading, what book are you reading?
Mindset.
Mindset.
Yeah, because of you and Feroz.
Yeah, Mindset shows the difference, among many of the concepts, shows the difference between thinking, I'm Tyron Woodley, when did we see him fight last?
Exactly.
2014?
That's the same thing,
I'm Tyron Woodley forever. This is Tyron Woodley. Like, people will say to and all level of fight fan and people who are interested in fights, they'll be like, oh, this guy's got a terrible chin. Well, actually, that one is different. That one we maybe often misunderstand.
Let me take a break. We got to take a break. We're going to come back and continue our exactly. Talk about mindset, growth mindset, and just everything that's going on, and our trip to Ottawa. Some of the best viewers, some of the best fans are Fight Network
and
fans.
And UFC 200.
Yeah, UFC 200. Eddie Alvarez, RDA, live right here on FN. Don't go anywhere. More of Five Rounds today when we come back. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ramdeen and Black with you. We were chatting about the main event of UFC in Ottawa, UFC Fight Night, Rory McDonald, Stephen Thompson, an incredible performance by Stephen Thompson. Yet people are not 100% sold. And before the break, I feel that it won't be until, and again, I said, you know, everything is based on what ifs.
Right.
And the what if is, what if Robbie Lawler beats Tyron Woodley?
Yeah.
There's no guarantees, of course. Tyron Woodley in a couple months' time could be the new UFC welterweight champion.
Sure.
Nobody gave this guy a hope in hell's chance of beating Carlos Condit. Yeah. He did exactly that.
And he did it by smashing his leg, injuring him.
That's
how
it works.
Now, people, you know, it was a fluke.
Damian Maia did it against Dong Hyun Kim.
But when you intentionally are creating damage on somebody, that's an intent to damage them. If you succeed, that in no way is like a fluke. You attempt – that's another thing. It's that you watch fighting. It's so awesome, all the collisions for 15 minutes. Most of them are intended to hurt somebody. People are like, well, why doesn't he open up with every one of those rights? It's just to create the balance in the moment to land a clean punch is very rare, even at the high level, because the other guy's moving. So to injure him – and Carlos Condit's my guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he's going to be the guy with the best chance to be Wonderboy.
Yeah.
But we're wondering all over. So you did ask about Tyron Woodley. Now, we were saying before the break, if we say – that Tyron Woodley that we saw in 2014, that's him. That's him maxed out.
Which you know that's not true.
It's not true.
Yeah.
Not only is that not – it may be not true. That's 100% not true. That's not him. He's something else now.
But at the same time, Robbie Lawler is also something
else.
Yes,
he is. That's exactly right. And he's been growing and growing and growing in battle. So that's maybe – as or more valuable than secretly growing, or does it hurt you? I mean, there's all these variables, and each one is its own. You know, you could research and study the amount of damage, what happens in growth versus damage to your brain, just of the amount of abuse he took. What happens, what are the percentage of if you're expecting a particular fighter and you get something else? I mean, Woodley's been training with Duke at a high level. He may look entirely different. His whole – and people – and a discussion that people will have, a debate, which is – again, we talked about earlier. Debate's great. But a debate would be like, no, what you are is what you are. It's a very limiting way to live your life. You live your life thinking, if I took piano lessons for 6 months, I'd be a better piano player. Mm-hmm. If I did squats, I will be able to squat more weight. If I read books about a topic, I will know more about that topic. If I train striking or kickboxing or my mental game or my research about nutrition, I will be a better fighter. Mm-hmm. That's what Tyron Woodley is. Brock Lesnar can't take a punch. Brock Lesnar's afraid to get hit. That's a fact, right?
Yeah, that's what people have said.
It's not a fact. That is not a fact. In fact, well, and – or is it a fact? I mean, are you afraid to get hit?
Well, this is the thing. I've talked to a lot of fighters about getting hit, and the majority of them, I'll say 90%, say nobody likes getting hit.
No, they don't. But of all the coaches I have observed or trained with or studied, there's a few just – real smart ones in there, and they look at everything. You know, Claude Patrick,
of course,
UFC many times. We got him here. He, when he was working with young guys, and I think this comes from Boss. I think this comes down all the way from Boss. He would desensitize. So you play, put mm-hmm. your gloves up, mm-hmm. and this would be early on in any kind of sparring session. Tap, tap, move, tap, tap, mm-hmm. back. Desensitize mm-hmm. you to it.
Because I've seen guys freak out.
For
and
sure.
as soon as hands come
sure.
at them, it's like a sledgehammer's coming at them. Yeah.
But if it's possible to make you a little bit less afraid to get hit, it's possible to make you a lot less afraid to get hit. Mm-hmm. This is something growable.
That you accepted.
It's a growth
right.
skill set. So you can absolutely – now, you nailed it if you accept it. If Brock Lesnar goes, yeah, damn it, I've been in there a couple times and I kind of freaked out, well, now you start working on it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do it? Oh, you can't do that. No, you are what you are. You're not what you are. You're what your potential is and what you train and work towards. Brock Lesnar, if he's accepted it, is way better at taking punches. In fact, I would argue you go back and look at a couple of his last fights, Velasquez and Overeem. You know how scary those guys are? There are moments he gets hit and you see him – and, you know, where he moves, and he's made improvements in those. Yeah, he lost those fights. Mm-hmm. But go look at them. Look at the way that he puts squares back up, not squares this way, but locks back up into range and understands, because it's also an understanding. Oh, my God, I'm scared to get hit. Well, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
It sucks. But it's also going to increase your likelihood of losing. As much as this is scarier, it will decrease your likelihood of losing and getting hurt. So logically, you move back towards that, and that can be trained. It can be trained just the way we can teach a kid not to be afraid of spiders. You work on it. You grow. And so the long and the short of that is Woodley is not what we think he is.
Yeah.
Now, has he grown enough to beat Lawler that has grown and kept growing and kept growing? He would have had to grow a lot.
Yeah.
But maybe he did.
Yeah, maybe he did. But I think based on what we've seen, based on what we know, which is limited at this point, we're not in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
We don't get to see Tyron Woodley on a regular basis.
Biggie told me that he's looking great.
Exactly.
His teammates tell me that on and off the record.
However, Mike Thomas Brown, we were in Ottawa. We talked to him this past weekend. He's like, oh, yeah, Robbie Lawler's firing on all cylinders.
Exactly.
So it's like, okay, you're getting some information from each team.
And Brown's not an actor.
Yeah.
And you look – and he's still, as deep as he is, a WBC champion, head coach, all that stuff, still just a fight nerd.
Yeah, he
still
is.
Still just like, I can't wait to talk to you about it. So no camera on. He's Robbie's another thing. He's out to hurt people. He's out to damage them, to break them down, you know? Woodley's got to deal with that, and he hasn't been in that environment for a while. All of that's real.
And you know what Robbie can take? That big slice of his lip.
As he yells and tears open even more.
Yeah, just a different individual.
That's not right. That's not right.
Right.
It's supposed to be like that. That's why we pay to watch these guys fight. You don't want to pay to watch me fight.
And that's
you
why
fight? We want to pay to watch these guys fight because they're the highest level.
And that's the thing. And that's why I feel that if it happens to be Robbie Lawler emerging victorious in this fight with Tyron Woodley, and that Stephen Thompson gets this shot against Robbie Lawler, and then he does his thing against Robbie Lawler and becomes the champion,
then
I think everybody will then say, oh,
yeah.
I just didn't realize that Rory was so ridiculously tough and that Thompson is as good as he is. Because you look at his style, it's like, well, why isn't he throwing more kicks? Why isn't he doing more? Why isn't he taking more risks? Why aren't we seeing this? Because the guy standing across the cage is waiting for the smallest mistake.
One judge thought Condit won three rounds. And two judges...
Condit
against Robbie.
Oh, yeah, right.
And two judges saw him winning two rounds. There was nobody in the world who didn't think he really, really had two brilliant rounds. There's one up for debate. And that debate was, well, this guy did more damage. Another discussion, because you can't gauge damage. Oh, his hair flew or he got he bled. Fighters will tell you that one leg kick could hurt more than any one of those things. Blocking something with your arm, breaking it. So we don't know damage.
Well, that's why Uriah Faber wanted, for his last fight with Dominic Cruz, he said he cut his hair a little bit shorter because when it's longer and I get hit, my hair looks worse.
Yeah. And that happened to Ben Henderson, but somehow we won all those decisions. So who knows? But you saw how good Condit did, and he played in those rounds, played a game that Stephen Thompson's the master of.
Amazing. Just the idea of – there's just so many cool matches. I know people are interested in the titles and whatnot, but I just think all the cool matchups with so many guys, especially at 55 or 70. But we got to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about International Fight Week. It's the return of Brock Lesnar. And, of course, Jon Jones takes on Daniel Cormier and the lightweight championship of the world live right here on Fight Network here in Canada. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you. And first thing we got to talk about, not first thing, I guess this we're a little ways into the show.
Yeah, this will be like the 40th thing.
Clearly people are interested in this whole sale of the UFC. Mm-hmm. Of course, as of the taping right now that we're shooting this, apparently the UFC has been sold. We might get sued for saying that. The zoo from my tip.
Well, let's just cover our asses.
Yeah.
A bunch of people that generally often get things right
are saying that it's sold.
We didn't say nothing.
We didn't say it. We didn't do any research.
While we're studying Carlos Condit, these guys are studying this
making
stuff.
Phone calls. Hey, what can you tell me about this? Can you meet me in a parking lot?
I know you'll get fired if you tell me this, but please tell me this.
So the deal is $4.2 billion. The UFC Zuffa has agreed to it.
Allegedly
agreed to it.
I think allegedly is only for crimes.
Is really? We'll use it in this sense.
Yeah,
okay. Apparently, the organization, the Zuffa owned promotion, has been sold. The Fertitta brothers, Lorenzo and Frank Fertitta, they're going to be out. However, the new company, this conglomerate, Dana White's going to stay on board as the head honcho. And you and I were having this discussion. Why wouldn't – now, again, I know that especially a lot of the fighters, they have a specific opinion of Dana White. They've had interactions with him, and they have whatever personal opinion they have because of those interactions. However, if you're objective and you look at, okay, I'm a guy, and I want to spend $4 billion on something, okay? This is something I'm going to spend Well, you could do that.
You could build an island of and just populate it only with
That sounds like a great time.
Nah, that would kill you. You would die.
Anyway, so the purpose of this company purchasing it is to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing anybody would want to do if you bought McDonald's, for example, is, you know what we need to do? We need to scrap the hamburgers and we got to start selling tacos.
Yeah, that's crazy. Go and buy anything that somebody worked really hard for 25 years to build, and then tell me what type of idiot would start changing it.
Yeah.
You know, your first job, if you were to, I mean, hey, I ain't no business magnate.
We've talked to some people, though.
But we have. We've talked to some people, CEO types. The smart ones purchase companies and then do nothing. because I bought something off you that's worth something. Mm-hmm. What? Now, why is this thing worth that? Oh, well, they do – they're a media conglomerate. Mm-hmm. They produce live shows. They are a pay-per-view company. They have et cetera, et cetera, yeah. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, cool. I don't think we should do pay-per-views anymore. Why don't we sell it all online? Like any large change could turn your $4 billion company into a $3 billion company. Dumb people who start taking over things right away start changing them because they don't understand the rarity of success. Success is rare. Like if you look at – I'm just going to pull out something in MMA.
It depends on what you mean. You say success is rare, but if you look at the NFL or the NHL or the NBA, they're filled with athletes, or the UFC. Yeah. They have 400, 500
– I mean success in any kind of endeavor.
Okay.
So there's one Facebook – mm-hmm. But then there's 9,000 other things that tried to make that.
Sure.
So you could say, well, social media is successful. And there's a Snapchat and an Instagram. There's three or four of them invested with billions. And you could go, oh, well, all you have to do is start one of these and it would work. Stupid people think that. And I don't mean to criticize. It's just that you shouldn't go investing in – you can do whatever you want, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to start up a company, go to it. There's a lot of different ways to learn.
Because I'm sure there's people out there that went down some certain path and everybody's like, no, you're so many years behind. Don't do this. And then they go and
exactly.
be a success.
And you know what? You should actually start things because – every single setback or failure teaches you something
exactly.
valuable for the next thing. So you want to start Facebook
the
now.
The book Mindset. Read it. It'll tell you all about that.
Yeah, you want to start Facebook right now, your own Ramdean book right now? Go right ahead. At the very least, you will start a business, learn some stuff, and then in the process you'll go, oh, I gotta analyze the landscape mm-hmm. before that my next business. Yeah. So you get something good out of it. So it's rare. Now, if you were to look at, for example, if somebody were to say – let's say you're starting an MMA website, something we know. What should we do with our MMA website? Well, all the successful ones do news. Oh, yeah. So do the 950,000 or let's say 8,000 failed ones. So you don't go, well, news is, works. There's 8,512 that failed mm-hmm. trying to do it. And some of them just – they do it in their bedroom or they do it for fun or any number of other things. But they're not Sure Dog Junkie, mm-hmm. the big ones. So the big ones are rare. Success is rare in any business. You go and you make books or you make ice cream. Most ice cream companies fail. There's a rare few that succeed. So – and when you build an enormous company, there's only, I don't know, 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, $4 billion companies in the world. It could be way less. It could mm-hmm. be 800. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of them. It's rare. So if something is rare, it's like, well, you know, you're the boss or I'm the boss. I mean, if you weren't the boss, I'm pretty sure I would do a great job. No.
Yeah.
If you put me in charge of your thing and I started making changes without learning the business for 2 or 3 years and having a war room with all the smartest minds teaching me for a year or two, I'd screw your business up. Mm-hmm. That's a guarantee. That's a guarantee. So any – how does somebody get to a point to lead a $4 billion buyout, they get there by being highly intelligent. And highly intelligent people won't change a thing on a company that's working. In fact, the first job, we're not even buying this thing if we can't get that guy who's been running it.
Yeah, right.
And we had this conversation earlier today. Randy, who I respect like crazy and consider him a friend, and Sean Shark and others were like, you know, the next step is to get Dana White out of there. They needed something new. Maybe. But the argument is he turned something from $2 million into $4
billion.
Yeah. So either all of his stuff is good, except for also he says things people don't like, he's pushy, whatever the things they want to say about him. Well, that's part of the package. You can't have all the other things without that. He goes on Twitter and calls people goofs.
Yeah.
I mean, well, we're not going to have a successful company until we have a president that doesn't call people stupid goofs. Well, he was never my friend or whatever. Well, we have a $4 billion company.
Yeah, and that's what
it comes
down.
People are like, oh, you know, they're never going to break through to the mainstream if Dana White. People don't get that. We talked about it today, whether you're Donald Trump or Kim Kardashian or Justin Bieber or Dana White, the whole package is what – if you can't have people yelling at each other over a barbecue about, well, you hate Dana and she loves Dana, you hate Justin Bieber and she loves Justin Bieber, you love Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
You love her.
I love Bieber.
Well, there you have it. And I hate Kim Kardashian. If we can't have that, we actually can't grow this big. You can't be the Republican nominee for the president of the United States unless half the people hate you. That's how it works now. And if you don't understand that, you're feeding it and thinking that your anger is somehow stopping it. It's actually helping grow it.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the UFC sale as well as International Fight Week. And of course, it culminates with UFC 200
next month in Las Vegas. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ramdeen and Black with you discussing the apparent sale of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And one of the reasons why I think this is this sale makes sense is Zuffa purchased it in 2001. It's not as if they started the company. They clearly got in it with the idea of, oh, maybe we can make some money. Maybe we can do good business with this thing. They ended up spending 50-some-odd million dollars.
Fortunately, the Fertittas...
They already had money. They had that. They had the money. And now they turn this company into a $4 billion company. And I know Lorenzo Fertitta, both he and his brother, want to further establish their casino empire
this
in Las Vegas.
They're excited for football.
Football, NFL, exactly. So the whole bunch of...
And if you had $3.5 billion, you could do
exactly
some of those
you could do exactly that. But one of the things I look at is the expansion. Okay, you have a model that works in North America. You've touched over in Australia and Europe. Essentially, Asia is an untapped market for you. And I look back at when former UFC middleweight champion Rich Franklin went over to work for ONE Championship, and he got the blessing of the UFC. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you know, in the past, Strikeforce dissolved, purchased. Yeah. WEC and Reed Harris and Sean Shelby dissolved, purchased.
And Reed and Sean are big parts of the UFC. Not just they got their people as in their fighters, but they got their talent, talent as fighters.
Behind the scenes guys.
Behind the scenes, yeah.
And so that's it. You know, they keep acquiring these different organizations, and I would imagine that was one of the reasons why. You send Rich Franklin over, go learn the landscape. When we're ready, we're going to buy ONE FC and now ONE Championship. Yeah. And you'll be the guy because the infrastructure is there. You can speak the language. Now, I'm not saying that's the case.
And we're not saying it's a conscious thing. Also, Rich, you get the feeling, you know, this conversation wouldn't have happened, but it'd be like, go, Rich. Dana's got a soft spot for those early guys. Forrest has a job there forever, and so does Matt Hughes.
But what do those guys do? Like, what are those Forrest Griffin and Matt? Okay, Matt Hughes, Chuck Liddell, Forrest Griffin, what are their gigs? Well, drive into the Zuffa offices in Vegas. Here's your office. We need you to send out emails all day.
When I was in the office in whatever it was, October, Forrest was there.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, it was just like any other time you bump into Forrest. He's like, what's up with your shoes, bro?
Yeah. Always some wisecrack. Always.
I like him. But he does something in the office. He's got some web thing that he gives, and he hangs out and greets people.
Yeah. So that's what it is. So why not? Well, you would imagine that Rich Franklin would have that opportunity as well. He was one of the huge stars.
Like, head off over.
Yeah, go
later
over.
Later we'll invite you back. I don't know if they discuss it because Rich.
But it would make sense.
Certain things you don't want to have out in the open. Like, it's like if you have the idea that later, if Rich is doing really well over in Asia, well, we have a good relationship with Rich. At least we think we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I don't know if you want to, like, let him in on the long-term strategy because that's leverage for him. Then he's like, they've been wanting me for 10 years. I want $6 million, you know?
Right.
So
right.
I don't think you'd want to let him in on it. But business is weird, man. Yeah. Business is strange. If you take an interest in business from the perspective of the art of war, business is a very weird thing, and a lot of times when we're looking at it, you know, it's okay to get caught up in the trees if you're entertained by it. If you're having fun, Dana White is a jerk, and if you're having fun by, you know, why are they bringing this in this main event? But that's the trees. You got to see the forest, and the forest says if you go up at 30,000 feet and look at it, if you're worth $4 billion, all the other stuff doesn't matter. If 40% of the people hate your president, or, you know, say they hate their president, most of them will be very excited to take a picture.
100%.
You know what I mean? I've had this conversation with Chael, who is a master – of manipulating these things. And the people who play those games that way, they're not interested in, you know, if it's a positive or negative response. They're interested in positive and negative responses. It's usually a sign that something is growing. Right?
Yeah.
So it's that kind of stuff is interesting. I talked to Chael about it, and it was interesting to hear his perspective on that kind of thing. He's a brilliant man. And half the people hate him, mm-hmm. and he knows it. But he did mention
there's price to pay.
Price to pay. If he goes to Brazil, he knows someone will try to kill him. So he can't. I can go to Brazil. Can you go to Brazil?
I can certainly
Chase,
go to
can
Brazil.
Can you go to Brazil?
I think Chase can go to Brazil.
Can all of our viewers
yeah,
go
yeah,
to
yeah, yeah.
Everybody can go to that guy. Can't go to Brazil. But, you know, that's the price you got to pay when you play those games.
When he goes to the ATM machine yeah, and gets his. Yeah. Oh,
I think I'll buy my own Brazil. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to play the world, but. You know, you want to be doing good work, and you want to be, you know, if you're a fighter, you want to be being tested and get a chance to – you want to be noble. You want to be looking for something that you can accomplish for more than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If that's who you are, I mean, that's what you'd like to be.
And I think that's part of the argument with, you know, Randy Couture and Sean Sherk mm-hmm. is that they feel that, you know, the reason why the UFC is worth $4 billion is because it was built on the backs mm-hmm. of – their fighters. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the fighters that have spent 5, 6, 10 fights in the UFC that will go back to their families broken yeah. and penniless and have to deal with head trauma and, you know, really shattered lives. Meanwhile, these guys get to walk mm-hmm. away with billions of dollars. And, yeah. and you can understand from a fighter standpoint, yep. you've been there.
Yeah. And I still look at things from the fighter's perspective because that's who I, mm-hmm. those are the people I admire. And there's no argument. There's no winnable argument for that. Like, we have a friend in our office who is a very, you know, staunch conservative capitalist.
You mean Ariel?
Yeah. Yeah. Not Ariel, who I called a taxi, but and who is our friend.
Not Ariel Helwani.
That was a joke. But Ariel Schneider, in our office, he's our friend also, and he's a great executive here. He's a very smart guy.
He's a troublemaker, essentially. What are you? He understands.
But he's a troll.
That's what he does.
He likes to troll you.
Yes, he does.
So he will say, and I don't think he's being serious either. I think he's trolling you. He's like, well, you know, you can get any fighters. And we are not saying Ariel, who works here, will be like, why did you guys bring me up on the show? We're not throwing Ariel under the bus. He is our friend making a point mostly to troll you.
Yeah.
But that troll, the way to troll you is to like, could have been any fighters. You know, it was more about the executives.
Yeah.
Nobody really believes that.
Yeah, right.
There's no real winnable argument to take the other side when you see a great fighter who later in his life is injured. Those are realities. Those are scary realities. Now, how do you – what do you do with those realities? You know, what do you do? Matt Hughes could have been Sean Sherk and fought mm-hmm. them and said Matt Hughes works for the company. Is that bad?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a – again, like most things, things are really complicated. It would be great if you could say to the argument, Ariel's a great journalist. He got screwed over by an angry, mean businessman.
Mm-hmm.
But that's never really the truth. Or this company got ripped off by this web journalist.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true either.
Mm-hmm.
All these things are complicated. Every variable of these is complicated. But complicated does not sell clicks and likes and stuff. Binary arguments. You're wrong. You suck. And he rules. That sells things. And so, sadly, we push in a society to have, oh, you were sent a tweet. You're a bad person. Oh, it was on him. He's a good person. Half the people hating Dana White loved him last month.
Yeah.
Half the people defending Ariel said terrible things about him a year before. These are the ways to create debate in an environment to sell your product. Ariel's never been more successful.
Yeah.
Dana, the company's worth $4 billion, and all of those mainstream newspapers and websites and mainstream everything, all of them said Brock Lesnar's fighting at UFC 200. Everybody wins.
Yeah.
And what we are is the crops being harvested as we freak out or defend one guy or yell at the other. We're just part of the machine. It's scary, but if you look at it that way, you can then realize they're playing with my emotions. I don't want people playing with my emotions. And go back and think for yourself.
Word is the UFC or Zuffa, the organization, will not make an official announcement till after UFC 200. Clearly a very, very busy time for the world's biggest mixed martial arts promotion. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about everything that is going on in Las Vegas in July for International Fight Week.
Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ramdean and Black with you. We're about to move on to International Fight Week, with focus being UFC 200. Before the break, we were talking about this apparent sale of the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Yeah, I was just thinking as we went to break, you know, in the last block or two, we talked about sales, we talked about company, we talked about people who disliked each other, we talked about angry people on Twitter, we talked about Ariel and Dana, we talked about all those things. And all of that is what I classify as drama.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I agree.
Didn't talk about any fights in that whole segment. And we always talk about fights. But the drama
we all get drawn into it.
The audience gets drawn into it. And my hesitation and the reason that sometimes I'm like, man, this is not always good, is because all of that time, if we're reading about it, if we're getting excited about it, if we're engaged about it, it's interesting, it's fun, it's entertaining, but we're not actually talking about
the
actual
art of fighting.
Fights. And when people are talking about, you know, people running for president arguing with each other, they're not talking about actual, like, the policies. They're not talking about war. They're not talking about food.
But I think
they're not talking about jobs. So when you get drawn into the drama of who said what, and I can't believe he said it, and I can't believe Dana went on that show. You know why Dana mentioned he had an outburst on Ariel the other day? You know why I did that?
No.
Because they just had a brand new podcast.
Yeah.
That's the time you need to do that. He knows what – they all know what they're doing. It's all a game. And Dana White needed to get – or the company really wanted to get their first podcast a lot of attention, bring Dana on, get him to say something controversial. Everybody will link through to it, and your podcast gets pushed, gets – everyone links to it. And that's all okay unless you're sitting around thinking, I don't want to be – manipulated. I don't want to be I'm mad again because now they did that to get you to listen to their podcast. They're playing with your emotions. So we should all question it. It's why we are angry sometimes, why we call many journalists tomato cans. It's what, because we think we should be talking about fighting and we've wasted too much time.
True. But you and I were coming back from Toronto, from Ottawa, with a friend of mine, Charles, who now works here at the channel. And we were talking about government. We were talking about, you know, Donald Trump and how people hate him. There's some people that hate Dana White, and they feel by if they can voice their opinion, something's going to change. And Charles, who worked in politics, said, you know what? We look at Donald Trump as if he'd be able to change a whole bunch of things, but there's systems put into place that can't be changed overnight. Yeah. Just because he says something's going to happen or Dana White says something's going to – there's so many factors involved that – we're talking about business here. We're talking about $4 billion. Yep. He is not allowed to make decisions that are going to affect
shrink it, affect
the Fertitta's abilities to sell this company and buy you an NFL franchise or the guys in Abu Dhabi. So as you pointed out, it is just to create interest.
Yes.
That's it.
And in the history of humanity, there has never been so much noise. Millions of podcasts and tens of millions of trillions of websites. How do you get anyone to pay attention to yours? You create debate and controversy. And so you get to a point, there's no such thing as bad. With, like, thumbs down is the same as thumbs up. You know, I hate this.
They're consuming
it. This guy. Yeah, and debate is – oh, because if somebody says they hate this guy – now – you know, somebody says they hate John Ramdean, would have three other people say, no, he's the greatest. Well, now we got us a debate, and they're going to come back and click on your site. We're being manipulated by all of these
things.
So
am I supposed to create interest? Am I supposed to say when we were in Ottawa, we were surrounded by a bunch of dumb media, there were media there that I wanted to punch in the head? Am I supposed to say that?
You could if that's – I mean, you got to be authentically you. Whatever it is you do, you should be authentically you. Whatever business you work in, fighters got to go in and fight authentically like them. Stephen Thompson, that's how he fights. He's refined his game. That fighting, this guy said it, Bruce Lee. This guy said some great things too, by the way. Yeah, Bruce Lee. He said that fighting is a reflection of yourself. It's an artistic reflection of who you are. And so is everything. If you're angry and you hate Ronda Rousey because she said something bad, that's a reflection of who you are. A very angry person. If, you know, so art, fighting, expression, and media itself is one Just the same way that fighting is a growing thing, fighting is this living organism that's ever changing, so is media. And you, the only difference is you're being brought into it. The if you hate the Kardashians and you ever wrote on a website that you hate the Kardashians,
oh,
you just
done.
Made the money and you've been engaged now with the hate of others who are mad at you. You're mad at Rhonda. Well, she brought it on herself, but you brought it on yourself because you said it about her. This is all – and
all right.
This ain't good for our world.
My head
you
is
should
spinning.
Be talking about fighting.
And that's what's going to happen. We're going to take one final break when we come back. You're talking about evolution. It's the evolution of Eddie Alvarez as he will be taking on RDA for the lightweight championship of the world. It's coming up next month, and you can catch it live if you're in Canada here on the World's Best Fight Network. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ramdeen and Black with you. We were supposed to talk about all the stuff that's going on in Vegas. We still got a couple of weeks before that's going down.
Even we get drawn into
drama,
so we can't blame others for it.
That's true.
Yeah.
But RDA, Eddie Alvarez, you talked about Eddie Alvarez because you created the Eddie Alvarez, the SAP Alvarez scale. Based on what we know of Eddie Alvarez throughout his career, he's a risk taker, but he's also an intelligent martial artist, and he surrounded himself with other intelligent martial artists who want to ensure his safety in the years to come. He's got a family, and now he understands that he has to fight conservatively because, as you pointed out, when you look at that scale, a lot of the champions are around the mid-risk.
Yeah, less risk and less situations of showing how much damage you can absorb. And George St. Pierre, I mean, sometimes his face will be all bashed up, but why did he fight that way? Well, if he got on top of you on your back, he could beat you up for a long time, minimize his risk. He never got submitted from that position. Matt Hughes caught him once, but that was that's going to happen. But he minimized his risk, and he minimized his necessity to take damage. Anderson Silva, although he was outside, he drew you into a place where he didn't get hit like you did, and he minimized – that was its style of risk minimization, to put you where he's good. And he never really took that much damage until Chael came along, my buddy, and just gave him a few overhand lefts. Many of the champions were in that range, and Eddie Alvarez is absolutely in play to be the lightweight champion of the world. RDA is a brilliant fighter. It's a brilliant fight.
And of course, John Jones and Daniel Cormier having the opportunity to do it again. We're going to have to wrap things up very, very quickly, but, we talk about the evolution. We haven't seen John Jones. You know, people look at that OSP fight. Oh, if that guy fought Daniel Cormier, Daniel Cormier would wipe the floor with him. It wasn't Daniel Cormier, so he didn't need to fight a specific style of fight. What do you expect to see different from John Jones? And I know you have a breakdown, but is there any one thing before we close out the show that we should specifically be looking for John Jones?
Yeah,
from
people
John
can
Jones.
See my breakdown on the UFC network. I think a lot of elbows in the clinch. Cormier was able to get a lot of uppercuts and hooks in there. I think Jones is going to look to accept that range and beat him up with elbows.
Well, that's it for us. Next week, we'll take a closer look at International Fight Week. Of course, the return of Brock Lesnar as he takes on Mark Hunt. This 205-pound championship tilt we will put under the microscope, as well as many of the other great fights that are going down in July in Sin City. For my broadcast partner, Mr. Robin Black, our producer, Chase Kaiser, I'm John Ramdean. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys next time on Five Rounds Today.